updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 6 a.m.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, October 11th. Railroad Commission candidates talk issues facing agency. The story was written by Mella McEwen. Early voting in the general election begins Tuesday. While the presidential race may dominate, other down-ballot races carry importance as well. For the Permian Basin, few are as important as the race for a seat on the Railroad Commission, the state agency that regulates the oil and gas industry. Democrat Krista Castaneda and Republican Jim Wright discussed via email three major issues facing the commission. Question: what should the Railroad Commission do to mitigate or eliminate flaring? Castaneda: it has been against the law to flare for over 100 years. Yet current commissioners grant excessive exception permits, allowing operators to continue flaring. They granted 27,000 exception permits to flare in the past 7 years alone. Rather than wasting that gas, we should be generating electricity right there in the Permian, powering oil operations and putting the excess into the power grid. We also need to reduce venting and fugitive methane emissions, those that escape from equipment, tanks, or elsewhere in the production chain. Intentional venting is illegal, but the rules are not enforced. These emissions harm our health, harm our environment, and reduce air quality. They reduce air quality and are an outsized driver of climate change. If enforced, existing regulations can already mitigate significant amounts of illegal methane releases. Flaring must decrease until it no longer exists, except when necessary for safety reasons. We must rein in intentional venting and fugitive methane emissions. We should improve detection, prevention, and enforcement programs. We could implement drone flyovers with infrared cameras or satellite technology to detect leaks and emissions. The majority of emissions come from a small number of super emitters, so quickly identifying the worst offenders helps tremendously. We can educate operators on best practices. If necessary, we can step up enforcement to make sure leaks are fixed. Right. Flaring, and most importantly, responsible flaring, is of paramount importance to the Railroad Commission and the industry alike. Oftentimes, anti-industry groups and folks like my opponent like to trend negative on this topic without paying much attention to the overwhelmingly positive facts surrounding this issue. For instance, recent data collected by the Railroad Commission demonstrates that routine flaring was proactively down across the board. In fact, in May 2020, only 0.47% of natural gas produced in Texas was flared. Secondly, natural gas production is critical to the economic success of our state long term. Chemical manufacturing and local utilities rely on natural gas to provide products and energy used across the globe. Whether it's LNG tankers leaving Corpus Christi or power and materials being utilized in industrial capacities across the state, the industry recognizes the importance of capturing every available molecule of natural gas they can, when they can. our highest natural gas producing areas, the Permian Basin and the Eagle Ford, have already reduced the amount of gas flared and continued to do so beyond government intervention. We need a railroad commissioner that recognizes the positive economic and environmental benefits of natural gas and helps molecules make their way to power plants, stovetops, and foreign markets. The Railroad Commission needs to do our part to educate the public on the great and responsible measures the oil and gas industry is taking to protect our environment while sustaining a fierce economic pace. Question: what steps should the Railroad Commission take to monitor seismicity? Castaneda: the science indicates a correlation between oil and gas activities and earthquakes. We need better public access to accurate information about the proximity of injection wells to fault lines. A more robust permitting review by adequately trained and compensated professionals would help. We also need to develop best practice guidelines informed by experts in the field. Oklahoma has dramatically reduced seismic activity by limiting allowable pressures and volumes. We can also reduce the need for injection wells linked to many seismic events by implementing water recycling programs so less fresh water is used and less disposal is required. Right. Like flaring, seismicity is an issue that is already being monitored and heavily considered across the board by industry and regulatory groups alike. It's important we form a task force dedicated to tackling issues like this and come up with a strategy that benefits the environment and doesn't prohibit the economic engine of Texas. Let me be clear. I may be a Republican, but that doesn't mean I'm anti-environment. In fact, I'd like for folks to understand that I'm considered an environmental services expert, and I've spent my life cleaning up and recycling energy waste with the sole commitment of being respectful to the environment. By bringing together the best and the brightest folks in the private and public sectors to work on items like seismicity, these collaborative efforts ensure transparency and results, and that's what I want to bring to the agency. Question: the commission is self-funded. Should it make up for any shortfalls by raising fees, implementing new fees, or asking legislators for supplemental funding? Castaneda: while the Railroad Commission is funded by revenue from production taxes and permitting fees, the budget for the Railroad Commission, like other state agencies, is set by the state legislature and is perennially underfunded. We need investment in the agency designed to oversee the oil and gas industry. The Commission struggles to compete for qualified, adequately trained, and compensated talent to fully track and enforce violations. We need increased investment in air and water quality monitoring tools. We need to modernize agency information technology infrastructure and make more information readily available to the public. I support an increased budget for the Commission and would favor raising the permit fees to provide greater availability and access to adequately trained and compensated professionals and the tools they need to fulfill the Railroad Commission's mission to oversee such a big part of our economy. Some fees haven't been raised in decades and are extraordinarily low. Permit fees in the low thousands for million-dollar wells. We need leadership and oversight to make sure the staff knows that enforcement is a priority. Jim Wright's own company was cited for multiple Railroad Commission violations and was ordered to cease and desist operating an oil field sludge reclamation facility, with Wright paying a fine of over $181,000 as a penalty. If Wright cannot follow the law, he cannot deter rule-breaking by others. Right. Going into next year, the Railroad Commission will not have the money it needs to be fully funded. We can thank COVID and an international price war for that. It is paramount that we do not cut funding for this agency. The Railroad Commission has perhaps the biggest job in the state in regulating the industry that accounts for most of our state budget. Coupled with the tens of millions already paid into the system by the oil and gas industry, we need to find a way for the Railroad Commission and the TCEQ to always be fully funded so that they can do their job as best they can. The people of Texas deserve that. Operators can expect more documentation reporting of environmental activities. The story was written by Mella McEwen. People in the oil patch may still be working from home during the COVID-19 pandemic, but that doesn't mean they're not expected to meet regulatory deadlines. Luis Vasquez, environmental manager with OTA Environmental, said that while agencies may assume oil field workers are working remotely, and that may cause them to miss a deadline, he urged companies to communicate with regulators. Quote, "Under those circumstances, try to mitigate non-compliance caused by COVID-19, he said during the weekly Oil Field Strong webinar presented by OTA Compression, OTA Environmental, Chimark, and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. Quote, "If anything causes non-compliance or you to miss a deadline, make sure to retain sufficient documentation describing what the offense was, how COVID-19 was the cause, and what action was taken in response, putting forth your best efforts to return to full compliance," end quote. Vasquez also advised emailing reports to regulators in addition to hard copies because regulatory staff may also be still working remotely. Spill prevention, control, and countermeasure plans remain important, he said. Earlier in the year, companies were storing oil on location amid the supply glut, he said. They were allowed to store oil on site in temporary storage tanks, but were required to have sufficient containment around those tanks in case of spills. Quote, "The definition of a mobile storage tank is if it had wheels or was on a skid, it was deemed mobile. If it was on site less than 6 months, it was not considered a storage tank." In May, that was the answer from government regulators, Vasquez said. Now we have individuals who have tanks coming up on 6 months on site. They might give that consideration. Even if it's a temporary storage tank, he advised keeping records on volumes, tank dimensions and capacities, emissions, and SPCC plans. Containment plans should also be updated if tanks are added or removed or equipment is added, anything that changes containment requirements. Flaring is also an issue, with the Railroad Commission updating the worksheets affiliated with flaring permits to gather better data, and New Mexico seeking public comment on draft regulations covering venting and flaring, he said. In New Mexico, the goal is to regulate venting and flaring to prevent waste and protect the environment and public health, Vasquez said. Ultimately, operators will be required to capture as much gas as technically feasible during drilling, completion, and production operations, resorting to flaring and venting only for safety measures. The proposed New Mexico rule also requires further visual inspections of production sites, with the amount of production determining the frequency of those inspections. Operators will also be expected to implement increased lead detection and repair procedures on all applicable sites, he said. The key takeaway is more documentation and reporting can be expected, Vasquez said. Large water recycling facility thrives on collaboration. The story was written by Mella McEwen. For all the talk of using recycled produced water instead of fresh water in hydraulic fracturing, producers find it a challenge to meet that goal. Quote, "Only a small percentage of the water is recycled," said Jason Gennaro, Chief Executive Officer of Breakwater Energy Partners. "The majority is still hauled away and placed in disposal wells. There are more than 2,000 saltwater disposal sites in the West Texas portion of the Permian Basin and just a handful of commercial recycling facilities, according to the Railroad Commission. Quote, "The reason is it's easier to dispose of water, it's more reliable," he said. Gennaro said he saw opportunity in helping operators be better stewards of the region's resources by increasing their access to recycled produced water and their ability to move excess recycled water to other operators. That's why his company recently opened the Big Spring Recycling System, the largest produced water recycling facility in the Permian Basin. With 1.5 million barrels of treated water storage capacity, the facility can integrate hundreds of thousands of barrels of produced water and then either recycle, store, or dispose of that water. The facility recycled almost 5 million barrels of produced water in the third quarter alone, he said in a phone interview. One key to the success of this operation is collaboration that can help balance water needs, Gennaro said. Operators are producers of water and consumers of water at different times, and a company like Breakwater can act as an air traffic controller between the two. It's that last mile of recycled water distribution capability that is a critical part of what makes this model successful, Gennaro said. Quote, "We need to move water at scale to be able to recycle more of it and thus reduce prices. Technology is also an important differentiator, both on the physical recycling and cloud-based database sides. This facility has collected more than 10 million points of data year to date. With its massive capacity, the facility can provide an operator with 100% recycled water for fracturing operations, which can be 100,000 barrels or more per well. At the same time, if an operator has too much produced water, Breakwater can store it or distribute it to another operator. Quote, "Part of our goal is to allow operators to use up to 100% recycled water, not just 30%. That way, they're not just saving on 30% recycled water, but on 100% recycled water," Gennaro said. "And the more produced water that is recycled, the lower the costs," he said. The facility serves both large and small operators, he said, with the benefits to each being different. While larger operators may have water infrastructure, the facility gives them the ability to aggregate enough recycled water for 100% of their needs and knowing their excess water is handled. Gennaro described the facility's connections as more off-ramps for water distribution. Smaller operators can access water without having to build infrastructure or paying for saltwater disposal. While the facility will serve Howard and Martin counties, he said its interconnections can expand the reach by a number of operator-owned produced water systems. Quote, "The more off-ramps and on-ramps, the more changes to recycle more water cost-effectively," he said. Quote, "There's a huge amount of opportunity to be more efficient," end quote. His company's model of collaborative recycling plays into the rising ESG, environment, social, and governance movement facing all businesses, including the oil and gas industry, he said. Quote, "There's a big ESG movement that's holding folks to higher standard and expecting them to report what they're doing," he said. When his company's model lets operators be good stewards of the area's water resources while also cutting costs. Quote, I believe we're on the right side of history. In 5 years, recycling will be much more prevalent, and I believe we have a responsibility to encourage that. End quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, October 11th, 2020. A Modest Proposal for the Board by Dennis Elam. Dennis Elam is an assistant professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School. Company and shareholder return and CEO annual pay. Cabot, shareholder return minus 39%, CEO annual pay, $11,900,000. Marathon, shareholder return minus 48%, CEO annual pay, $11 million. Devon, shareholder return minus 55%, CEO annual pay, $11,700,000. Apache, shareholder return minus 54%, CEO annual pay, $14,500,000. CEO pay has risen for the last 4 years for oil and gas drillers like the four companies named above, but the returns have remained solidly negative in double digits. Now, understand I am a college professor who teaches accounting ethics covering corporate governance and transparency. These CEOs make 100 times my salary, or conversely, I make 1% of their compensation. Are they really worth that? Fracking firms have gone for growth over income. One observer notes, we have had 10 years of consistent value destruction with management teams getting paid for it. So to demonstrate how to incorporate ethics and governance on a practical basis, I hereby offer my service in replacement of your current CEO. My credentials follow. I visited my first drilling rig at age 12 with Dad, who worked for Gulf Oil at the time. I have hands-on experience with a family-owned oil field construction firm which operated in the Permian Basin. I developed a personal relationship with Lava Soap and Gojo Hand Cleaner. I will be a hands-on CEO. I have 3 college degrees and the CPA designation. I know my way around financial statements. My Series 7 license originally dates to 1973, so I know my way around Wall Street as well. I have written a weekly column on Texas oil and gas for 20 years. Regarding your loss situation, I was the Chapter 7 bankruptcy trustee for Midland for 5 years. I have hands-on experience in returning value to creditors. Oh, I won't be moving to Houston or Oklahoma City or Findlay, Ohio. The oil is in the Permian Basin and the Eagle Ford, not on Memorial Drive in Houston. And having lived there for many years, I won't need a map to find my way around Penwell, Goldsmith, Kermit, or Andrews. So here's the deal. I will take the job at any one of the four companies for $2.75 million. That's 25% of what you are spending now. This will build goodwill with employees and shareholders. I could hardly do worse than the guys you are using now. I will ask for a 4-year contract. Football coaches receive contracts. If they have a record like the coaches you employ now, they would have been long gone seasons ago. The Economist. K-Shaped Recovery by M. Ray Perryman, head of the Perryman Group. The U.S. economy continues to generate new jobs, with the latest September report showing a modest gain of 661,000. The unemployment rate has decreased from 14.7% in April to 7.9% last month. Though the situation is improving, the total increase over the past few months is well below the 22.2 million lost during March and April. Additionally, the recovery has been decidedly uneven. The rising tide that was improving the lot of people from all socioeconomic groups prior to the pandemic has unfortunately turned. The correlation between education level and employment is well established. Not only do those with more education typically earn greater incomes, they are also less likely to be unemployed. The pandemic has caused this pattern to accelerate. Remote work had been growing before COVID-19, but its prevalence has increased dramatically. More people are working at home, with companies planning to maintain this posture for now. However, workers with less education tend to be in jobs for which this approach is not feasible. Rather than shifting to remote work, they have become unemployed. Industries such as professional and business services, financial activities, information, and public administration have been able to largely maintain operations. Many others, salons, travel and leisure, bars and restaurants, for example, had to shut down for a period, only to reopen with reduced capacity. Given the types of jobs and industries which lend themselves to remote work, it's not surprising that higher levels of education have meant a greater likelihood of working from home. Recent surveys by the Bureau of Labor Statistics indicate that about 70% of people with a bachelor's degree and higher are in jobs suitable to perform remotely, compared to just 25 to 30% of those with only a high school diploma. Although many companies are struggling during the pandemic, and job losses have impacted workers across all education levels, unemployment increased the most among those with lower education attainment. In September, unemployment rates ranged from 4.8% for people with at least a bachelor's degree to 10.6% for those with less than a high school diploma. Moreover, there was a spike in chronic, more than 6 months, joblessness, and an increase in those dropping out of the workforce. In the midst of these challenges, housing values and the stock market have generally escalated, and the tech sector has boomed. Consequently, wealth among the upper economic echelons has increased, while unemployment, food insecurity, and poverty have also skyrocketed. It is a recovery that is embracing those at the top while devastating those at the bottom, a K-shaped recovery. To achieve long-term prosperity, we must keep the structure in place, which requires providing viable opportunities for everyone. This needs to happen soon. Stay safe.
Thank you for joining us for this week's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Recording Library of West Texas Radio is bringing you the League of Women Voters of Texas Nonpartisan Voters Guide for 2020. This 2.5-hour program can be heard Saturday at 1 p.m., Sunday at 9 a.m., Monday at 6 a.m., Tuesday at 6 p.m., and Wednesday at 3 a.m. The Voter's Guide is funded and published by the League of Women Voters of Texas. The League never supports or opposes political candidates or political parties.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 50 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, October 11th, 2020, Life and Times. Sewell offers new way to give by Michael Bauer, M-B-A-U-E-R at OAOA.com. The Sewell family of companies announced two upcoming events for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. One will be a live stream webcast, and the other will be Dine and Donate Week, which will take place at the Press Cafe. The events are a part of a fundraiser for Pink the Basin, a local organization that provides breast cancer services to women in West Texas. The webcast, which is 10 a.m. Monday, will run for about an hour and will feature a message from breast cancer survivor and author Margaret Feinberg. The webcast is part of the Sewell Leader Live series. The series began after Sewell's annual leadership event